A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's looking at the rat's nest of AC adapters behind his rack and asking the obvious question. There has to be a better way. He's got Raspberry Pis, routers, various DC devices all plugged into a UPS. But the Woolwart sprawl is ugly. It wastes space, and it's just... His question is basically, can you build a single AC to DC breakout panel that distributes power at the right voltage per output instead of living in Brick City? And the answer is absolutely yes. This is a solved problem in telecom. It's just weirdly underused in home labs.
The thing is, once you see the alternative, you can't unsee it. Picture a typical rack right now. You've got maybe 8, 10, 15 little black bricks crammed onto a power strip, some of them blocking adjacent outlets because they're too wide, the whole mess sagging under its own weight, blocking airflow through the rear of the rack. It's not just ugly, it's genuinely a thermal problem and a fire hazard.
The Woolwart tumbleweed. Nature's least elegant power topology.
Here's the core of what Daniel's asking. His UPS outputs 120 volts AC. But almost everything small in that rack, the Raspberry Pi, the cable modem, the network switch, actually runs on low voltage DC. 5 volts, 9 volts, 12 volts, 19 volts. So the default solution is, take that clean AC from the UPS, convert it to DC inside each individual brick, and then deliver it to the device. Every single device gets its own little conversion stage, its own little heat output, its own little failure point.
Which is like having a separate gasoline refinery in every car, instead of one refinery feeding a network of gas stations. The redundancy is pointless.
The alternative is what's sometimes called a centralized DC distribution system. You take one high-quality AC to DC power supply, something like a Meanwell, LRS, 35012, and you mount it in the rack. It converts AC to a single DC voltage once, at high efficiency. Then you run that DC voltage to a fused distribution panel, and from there you branch out to all your devices. If a device needs a different voltage than what your main PSU puts out, you drop a tiny DC to DC converter on that specific branch. That's the whole architecture.
One conversion stage instead of 15. And that's the moment where the efficiency math starts getting interesting.
Right, let's put numbers on this. A typical cheap Woolwart runs at about 60 to 70% efficiency under load. That's per Energy Star test data. So if your device needs 10 watts, the brick is pulling maybe 14 to 16 watts from the wall, and the difference, 4 to 6 watts, is heat, just radiated into your rack. A Meanwell LRS 350 series, by contrast, is rated at 88% typical efficiency. For that same 10-watt load, you're pulling about 11.4 watts, and only 1.4 watts is heat.
Per device, you're shaving off a few watts of waste. Multiply by 10 or 15 devices, and suddenly you're talking real numbers.
Let's walk through a concrete build, because I think that's what Daniel's really after. What does this actually look like in a rack? Say you've got a 1U shelf. You mount a Meanwell LRS 35012 on it. That's a 12-volt, 29-amp power supply, about 350 watts total capacity, and it costs around $40. It's an open-frame unit with a built-in fan, active power factor correction, and a little trim potentiometer so you can tweak the output voltage slightly. From that PSU, you run thick wires, maybe 12 AWG, to a fused distribution block. Something like a Blue Sea Systems 5025, which is a six-circuit fuse block originally designed for marine and RV electrical systems. It takes ATO blade fuses, the same kind in your car, and gives you screw terminals for each circuit.
You've got one big 12-volt rail feeding six individually fused outputs, and from there you can branch out.
Output 1 goes directly to a 12-volt PoE switch. No conversion needed, just a barrel connector or screw terminals. Output 2 goes through a Traco Power TSR 1-2450. That's a tiny switching regulator, about the size of a postage stamp, that takes 12 volts in and puts out a clean 5 volts at 1 amp. Costs about $10. That powers a Raspberry Pi 5. Output 3 goes to a 12-volt to 19-volt boost converter for something that needs laptop-level voltage, maybe a small NUC or a monitor. All of this fits in one U of rack space.
The fusing is the part that makes this safe rather than sketchy. You size each fuse to the device on that circuit. So a Raspberry Pi on a 2-amp fuse, a switch on a 5-amp fuse. If something shorts, the fuse pops and only that device goes down. The rest of the rack stays up.
That's the critical safety point. Some people hear open frame power supply and screw terminals and think this is some kind of mad scientist setup. But a fuse distribution block with proper terminal covers is really no more dangerous than the fuse panel in your car. Probably less so, honestly. You're working with 12 volts, not 120. The main PSU has overcurrent and short circuit protection built in. Add a terminal cover, mount everything securely, use properly crimped ring terminals, and you've got something that's arguably safer than a power strip sagging under the weight of 15 wall warts.
The bar is low. The wall wart tumbleweed is already a fire hazard. This is an upgrade on safety and not a compromise.
Now, let's talk about the efficiency cascade in more detail, because this is where the real payoff lives. Daniel mentioned UPS runtime as a concern, keeping things online during outages. And this architecture directly extends your UPS battery life.
Walk me through the math on that.
Take a hypothetical home lab. 8 Raspberry Pis, 2 PoE switches, and a cable modem. 11 devices, each with its own wall wart. The bricks are pulling about 130 watts total from the UPS because they're all running at maybe 65 to 70% efficiency. Now you rip all that out and replace it with one Meanwell PSU and a distribution panel. The same devices, same load, but now the AC to DC conversion happens once at 88% efficiency. Total draw at the wall drops to about 105 watts.
You're saving roughly 25 watts just by eliminating redundant conversion stages. That's a meaningful chunk of a UPS battery budget.
On a typical 1500 VA UPS with a healthy battery, that 25-watt difference could extend runtime from 22 minutes to about 28 minutes. That's 25% more uptime during an outage. And the flip side is heat. Each of those wall warts is dissipating maybe 2 to 5 watts as heat. 11 bricks at 3 watts each is 33 watts of heat being dumped into your rack. The single PSU, even at 88% efficiency on a 100-watt load, is dissipating about 12 watts. So you've gone from 33 watts of waste heat to 12.
That's where the cooling argument gets real. In a dense rack, dropping 20 watts of heat load can lower internal temperatures by 2 to 4 degrees Celsius, which means your case fans spin slower, which means less noise, which means your spouse stops asking why the closet sounds like a data center.
The marital acoustics improvement is an underrated benefit of good power design.
I'm serious. Noise is the thing that gets home lab projects exiled to the garage. Heat and noise are the same problem, and wall warts make both worse.
Let me address a misconception. I see a lot. People look at this and think, well, I need 5 volts for the Pi, 12 volts for the switch, 9 volts for the router, so I need 3 separate power supplies. That's not true. You pick one main voltage, almost always 12 volts, because it's the most common in networking gear, and it's high enough to step down efficiently. And then you use tiny buck converters for the oddball voltages. A buck converter takes a higher DC voltage and steps it down to a lower one with typically 90%+ efficiency. They're cheap, they're tiny, and they're dead reliable. A Traco TSR1 series regulator is literally a drop-in replacement for a classic 7805 linear regulator. But it switches instead of burning the excess voltage as heat.
One 12-volt PSU plus a handful of $5 buck converters covers basically every low-voltage device in the rack. 5 volts, 9 volts, 12 volts, all from one rail.
19 volts for laptops or mini-PCs just needs a boost converter instead of a buck. Same concept, just stepping up instead of down. The point is, you're not buying a PSU per voltage. You're buying one PSU and a few converters. That's what makes the economics work.
Let's talk cost, because Daniel's going to want to know if this actually saves money or if it's just an aesthetic upgrade.
It breaks even faster than most people expect. A Meanwell LRS35012 is about $40. A Blue Sea Systems fuse block is about $25. Add maybe $15 for fuses, wire, terminals, and a couple of buck converters. So you're in for about $80 total. A single decent quality wall wart, not the garbage that comes free with a Raspberry Pi, but something from a reputable brand, costs $10 to $15. So if you're replacing 5 or 6 bricks, you're already at break-even. And most home lab racks have way more than 6 bricks.
At 10 or 15 devices, you're saving money. Plus you're getting better efficiency, lower heat, longer UPS runtime, and a rack that doesn't look like a dumpster behind an electronics store.
The economics get even better if you're starting from scratch. If you're building a new rack and you'd otherwise be buying a PDU plus a pile of wall warts, the centralized DC approach is cheaper from day one. A basic switched PDU like an APC AP7900 still requires every device to have its own brick. You're paying for the PDU and you're paying for the bricks. The breakout panel approach eliminates both.
All right. Let's get into the gotchas, because nothing is ever as simple as the brochure makes it sound.
Three main things to watch for. First, ground loops. When you have multiple devices sharing a common DC ground through the distribution panel, you can get noise coupling between them. This mostly matters if you've got sensitive analog gear, software-defined radios, audio interfaces, anything with a preamp. The fix is isolated DC to DC converters on those specific branches. They're a few dollars more expensive than non-isolated ones, but they break the ground path and eliminate the hum.
If you're running an SDR dongle for ADS-B tracking or whatever, spend the extra $5 on an isolated converter for that branch.
Second gotcha, inrush current. A 350-watt power supply has big input capacitors. When you first plug it in, those caps look like a dead short for a fraction of a second, and the PSU can pull a huge current spike, sometimes 40 or 50 amps. If your UPS is already near its limit, that inrush can trip the overload protection and shut everything down.
Which is a deeply ironic failure mode. The device you installed to keep everything running during an outage is the thing that knocks everything offline when power comes back.
The fix is simple. Plug the PSU into the UPS, power it on, let it stabilize, then power on your loads. Or use a UPS with a sequenced outlet group that staggers power on. Some PSUs also have a soft start feature that limits inrush, but the Meanwell LRS series doesn't. You have to manage it externally.
The third gotcha?
Voltage drop over long DC runs. This one bites people because they're used to AC, where a 6-foot extension cord loses basically nothing. At 12 volts DC, the math is different. On 18 AWG wire at 12 volts and 2 amps over 6 feet, you lose about 0.6 volts. That means your device sees 11.4 volts instead of 12. For a 12-volt switch, that's probably fine. Most gear tolerates plus or minus 5%. But if you're feeding a buck converter that's stepping down to 5 volts, and the buck converter is already getting 11.4 instead of 12, its output might sag below 4.8 volts. And 5-volt devices, especially Raspberry Pis, get cranky below about 4.75 volts.
The undervoltage lightning bolt of shame on the Pi. You never want to see that.
The fix is straightforward. Use thicker wire for longer runs. 14 AWG or 12 AWG instead of 18 AWG. Or place your step-down converter close to the device, not close to the distribution panel, so the long run happens at 12 volts where the drop matters less. Or, and this is the elegant solution, use the trim potentiometer on the PSU to bump the output to 12.5 volts, compensating for the drop across the whole system.
Measure at the device end under load, not at the distribution panel. That's the rule.
Multimeter at the barrel connector while everything is running. If you're seeing less than 4.8 volts at a 5-volt device, you've got a problem.
We've covered the architecture, the efficiency, the cost, and the failure pattern. What I want to know is, why isn't this standard? Every home lab YouTuber has a rack tour with the same sad tangle of bricks behind it. This is an exotic technology. Meanwhile, PSUs and Blue Sea fuse box are commodity parts. The wiring is simpler than crimping Ethernet.
I think there are two reasons. One is that people just don't know it's an option. They see wall warts as a fact of life, not a design choice. The second is that the commercial alternatives are priced for enterprise. A proper rack mount DC distribution system from a company like Package or Wattbox costs hundreds of dollars, and at that price point, the DIY approach looks like a hack. But the DIY approach, with a Meanwell PSU and a marine fuse block, is functionally the same thing. Telecom companies have been doing centralized DC distribution for decades. Telephone central offices run on a negative 48-volt DC bus with battery backup. The whole industry standardized on this because it's more reliable and more efficient than 1,000 individual power supplies.
It's one of those things where the prosumer market just hasn't caught up to what the pros figured out 30 years ago.
It's starting to shift. I'm seeing more forum threads on Reddit's Rahome Lab and the Serve the Home forums where people are sharing their DC distribution builds. The parts are accessible, the knowledge is out there, and the results speak for themselves. A clean 1 U-Power shelf with labeled circuits and no bricks. It's the kind of thing that makes you want to open the back of your rack just to look at it.
The cable management equivalent of a well-organized toolbox. Satisfying on a deep level.
All right, let's get practical. If Daniel, or anyone listening, wants to do this, what's the actual weekend plan?
Step 1. Inventory everything. Write down every DC device in your rack, its voltage, its maximum current draw, and its connector type. Group them by voltage. You'll probably find that 80% of them are 12 volts, and the rest are 5 or 9. That tells you your main PSU voltage, almost certainly 12 volts, and how many buck converters you need.
Step 2. Size your main PSU. Add up the total wattage of all your devices, add a 20% safety margin, and buy a PSU that can handle it. For most home labs, a 350-watt unit like the Meanwell LRS35012 is plenty. If you're running more than about 280 watts continuous, step up to the 500-watt version. Don't run these at 100% rated load continuously. They'll get hot and loud.
Step 3. Pick your distribution. A Blue Sea Systems 502-5 gives you 6 fuse circuits, which is enough for most small racks. If you need more, then make a 12-circuit version. Use ATO blade fuses sized to each device. The fuse should be rated for about 125% of the device's maximum current draw.
Step 4. Buy your converters. For 5-volt devices, the Traco TSR1 series is great. They're pin compatible with old linear regulators, but they're switching, so they don't get hot. For 9-volt or 19-volt devices, you'll need adjustable buck or boost modules, something like a D-Rock Mini adjustable converter. They're a few dollars each on Amazon, and you set the output voltage with a tiny trim pot and a multimeter.
Step 5. Build it on a bench first. Mount everything to a 1U shelf or a piece of plywood. Wire the AC input to the PSU, and for the love of safety, use a proper IEC connector with a fuse and a switch, not bare wires into a wall outlet. Wire the DC output from the PSU to the distribution block's main terminals, then wire each circuit from the fuse block to its device or converter. Use crimped ring terminals or ferrules, not bare wire under screw terminals. Label every single cable.
Labeling is not optional. 6 months from now, when something goes down and you're troubleshooting at 2 in the morning, you will not remember which fuse feeds which device. A label maker is the best $10 investment in this whole project.
Step 6. Test. Power it up on the bench with no loads first. Measure voltage at the distribution block. Then connect one device at a time, measuring voltage at the device end under load. If anything is low, adjust the PSU trim pot or shorten your wire runs. Once everything is stable, then rack it.
One more thing. Document it. Take a photo of the finished panel with the fuse ratings visible. Write down which circuit goes to which device. Tape a cheat sheet inside the rack door. Future, you will be grateful.
The whole thing is maybe 4 hours of work if you're taking your time. Faster if you've done it before. And the result is a rack where the power distribution is as clean as the network cabling.
Now, I want to zoom out for a second, because Daniel's question points towards something bigger. The trend in power delivery is moving toward USB-C power delivery, a single cable that can negotiate anything from 5 volts to 20 volts at up to 100 watts, or even 240 watts with the newer extended power range spec. And I can't help but wonder, what does a DC distribution panel look like in a USB-C PD world?
Instead of screw terminals and buck converters, you'd have a USB-C PD hub, one DC input, a bunch of USB-C outputs, and each device negotiates its own voltage. The panel becomes smart.
And we're already seeing the beginnings of this. PoE++, that's the latest power over Ethernet standard, delivers 60 watts at 48 volts over Cat 6 a cable. The line between power distribution and data distribution is blurring. A future rack might have a single DC bus carrying, say, 48 volts, with smart PD controllers at each device port negotiating the final voltage. No manual configuration, no fuse blocks, no trim pots. Just plug in a device and the rack figures out what it needs.
The rack becomes a power router, not just a power strip. And that's where this whole approach is heading. Centralized, efficient, intelligent DC distribution. What Daniel's asking about is the DIY version of that future, available today with off-the-shelf parts.
It's a satisfying project. There's something about opening the back of your rack and seeing a clean panel with labeled circuits instead of a shameful tangle of bricks. It's the difference between something that grew by accident and something that was designed.
The sloth approves. Clean lines, minimal waste, everything in its place. This is the power distribution equivalent of good cable management. And the fact that it saves you money, extends your UPS runtime, and drops your rack temperature. That's just the universe rewarding good engineering.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1943, volcanologists measuring fumarole gases at the Furnas volcano in the Azores recorded a carbon dioxide concentration of 98.2% by volume, a reading that, when remeasured with modern gas chromatography in 2019, was found to have been overestimated by nearly 4% due to the era's chemical absorption tubes absorbing trace hydrogen sulfide as if it were CO2.
4% measurement error from dissolved rotten egg gas. Science marches on. The open question we're left with, and this is where I think Daniel's prompt naturally leads, is whether the USB-C PD ecosystem eventually makes all of this screw terminal and fuse block work obsolete. If every small device in 5 years ships with USB-C PD input, the breakout panel of the future is just a powered USB-C hub with a single DC input. But until then, the Meanwell plus Bluesea approach is the cleanest, most efficient way to get clean DC power to a rack full of mismatched devices. One PSU, one panel, no bricks. That's the takeaway.
If you build one, send us a photo. We want to see the before and after. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find show notes and more at myweirdprompts.com.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.